You're listening to DraftKings Network.
Texting privacy policy and terms and conditions posted at textplan.us. Texting enrolls for recurring automated text marketing messages. Message and data rates may apply. Reply stop to opt out. Individual results may vary. Consult a doctor prior to use.
You've lost so much weight. How'd you do it?
I got medical treatment for weight loss through Zelty and lost 50 pounds. I struggled for the longest time, but Zelty makes it easy and affordable to get weight loss treatment 100% online. Zelty providers can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications clinically shown to help people lose weight, like Wegovy, Zepbound, and others.
I've heard those medications can help you lose weight, but aren't they expensive?
Zelty can help get the medication covered by insurance, so it's as little as $0 a month.
What if you don't have insurance?
No problem. Zelty may be able to help you get other GLP-1 medications for 80 to 90% off the price of name brand medications.
I'm ready to start losing weight. How do I get started with Zelty?
Just text.
Text Thin to 200-300 to get started today with Zelty and see if weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound are right for you. Don't wait. Text now for a link to your exclusive offer. Text Thin to 200-300. That's Thin to 200-300. Thin to 200-300.
Now's a good time to remember where the story of tequila started. In 1795, the first tequila distillery was opened by the Cuervo family. And 229 years later, Cuervo is still going strong. Family owned from the start, same family, same land. Now's a good time to enjoy Cuervo, the tequila that invented tequila. Go to Cuervo.com to shop tequila or visit a store near you. Cuervo, now's a good time.
Trademarks owned by Becle, SAB, the CV. Copyright 2024, Proximo. Jersey City, New Jersey. Please drink responsibly.
This is the Dan Le Batard Show with the Stugatz Podcast.
Always enjoy talking to this guy. He's with us on behalf of Pepsi and DraftKings. Both are giving you a free shot at $100,000 for getting zero right with the DraftKings Zero Right Bracket Challenge presented by Pepsi Zero Sugar. We'll get to that in a second. His sons are big stars at Columbus High School here in Miami. Thank you for joining us, Carlos. How unreasonable are you watching them play? Are you somebody who berates referees? How are you about watching your sons play basketball?
Dan, how you doing? Good to be on, by the way. I do my best just to be a dad and enjoy the game, but there are some times where I'll go talk to the ref at halftime. But for the most part, I just cheer them on.
Do you ever tell the coach that the coach doesn't know what he's doing or any derivative thereof because you know more about basketball than the coach does?
No, I haven't done that. Coach is doing a really good job. Coach Andrew's doing a great job of coaching the boys. They won their second state championship this year as sophomores and getting ready for the national tournament. So he's doing pretty good.
What can you tell us that's not known, Carlos, about the recruitment of you and others in that crazy 2010 free agency time?
Oh, it was nuts, man. I mean, obviously, we were trying to decide if we're going to stay where we are. I was with the Utah Jazz or, you know, go on to different situations. I ended up going to Chicago. But great, great recruitment, man. I talked to, you know, 5, 6, 7 different teams in different realms and trying to figure out where LeBron was going because, obviously, he was the big fish that summer. He wanted to partner up, obviously, with somebody else. He ended up doing a pretty good job in getting D-Wade and Bosch to go down to Miami with them. So, but yeah, it was fun, man. We had a good time. We enjoyed, you know, I enjoyed the free agency process, the recruitment process. Got a chance to go to Chicago and play with some young studs like D Rose and Joakim Noah. So had a good time.
What do you regard as the most difficult professional decision you've had to make on your choices?
I would say just trying to decide where a championship could be won. You know, I think I wanted to, there was a huge part of me that wanted to stay in Utah. You know, I spent 6 years there and built a great rapport with Jerry Sloan and Darren Williams, who was my point guard, another star we had on the team. But there was something missing. I think we needed like a real big center, you know, like a Marcus Camby or DeAndre Ayton or someone like that to block shots and rebound. Chicago had all the pieces that I felt like we needed to win a championship. And then obviously D Rose, him being injured was tough. You know, obviously the first year we go all the way to the conference finals, lose to the Heat, and we thought like the next couple of years we'd be in the championship. But without our best player, it was very difficult.
How often do your sons call up on YouTube the time that you made an and-one and swung your fist so ferociously in celebration that you hit a referee in the junk?
They have done that many times. They sent me the video. I think they're hanging out with their buddies, and some of their buddies showed the video to them, so they brought it up. But people, you got to remember, that was a game we were getting blown out in Dallas. Dirk was going crazy, and we actually made a comeback and won that game. So that moment was part of that comeback, and was a good moment.
If you had to choose one game above all others that you remember the most fondly, any point in your career, what one game would that be?
I would say the gold medal game against Spain, in 2008, winning the gold medal. Very few chances as athletes do we get a chance to represent our country. And that was a very unique moment. We got a chance to win the gold medal in Beijing and to kind of revitalize USA being the dominant country for basketball. That was an awesome moment.
Jerry Sloan seems like he'd be very difficult to play for.
No, quite the opposite. The good thing about Coach Sloan, may he rest in peace, he was a player, right? So I remember one of my first conversations with him when I came to the Jazz in 2004 was like, look, I only want to see you guys for 2 hours. We're going to practice from 10 to 12 because when I played, I hated going over 2 hours myself. So he was great for – he was like one of those guys that was tough-minded. He wanted tough players on his roster. So he only recruited those kind of guys. But he was a player. So he knew, after 2 hours, if you go hard for 2 hours, that's all you really need to get enough work in. And then at the same time, he was an X and O's guy, but he was a your will can carry you kind of guy. So I had a great time playing for him.
He always gave off no-nonsense coach, and he also gave off would lather up his chest with a bar of soap and then just use that as shampoo.
No, he was tough, man. I mean, I remember seeing the interview that the logo did, Jerry West did, and they asked him, who was your toughest opponent? And he was like, going to see Chicago and playing against Jerry Sloan, because I would leave that game with all type of bruises on my body. I felt like I was in a war. And that's the kind of respect he had amongst his peers. And that's the same way he was as coaching. He had that kind of respect because he was no nonsense, took the game very serious. And I really enjoy playing for him.
Carlos, I'm hoping you can address something because we've had you on a couple of times. And trust me, I'm doing my best to make sure Dan doesn't ask you about the Beijing again. I'm really working hard. Okay?
We did that already.
I know we've done that. He's going to ask you about Prince. I'm doing my best.
I
all right?
don't have it right now. Like I got, I got the ball head hat on.
I'm doing my best over here to play
defense. I want to know if Carlos Boozer fired anybody over the Beijing. I want to know if anybody.
He can't help himself, man.
He did fire somebody.
I did. The same guy. It took me seven. I had to shampoo my hair seven times.
You should have done it with a bar of soap, like Jerry Sloan.
Yeah.
I do want to ask you because social media wasn't really a thing when this happened, and I don't think we've ever asked you about this. There was a perception when you signed with Utah that the narrative was on all the blogs, Carlos Boozer, quote, cons a blind man. I don't really know the particulars surrounding that, but you were made to be a villain and positioned as a backstabber. What did people get wrong about that situation, you leaving the Cavs and going to Utah?
Yeah, well, the reality of it was I was a second-round pick, so I had a two-year contract with an option for a third year. And they had discussed taking my option away so they could re-sign me. The only bad thing about that was it would be tampering, and they were going to be under investigation. So, when we went through the process, they took away my option. They wanted to give me a new contract. The league knows everything. So when they took away my contract, my third year option, they were going to offer me a deal around $40 million. But the league was also getting indication that there was four other teams that were offering me 70 plus. So if I had re-signed, then they would immediately knew that it was tampering, kind of like the Joe Smith situation in Minnesota back in the day. So if I had done that, we had got wind, me and my team had got wind that there would be an investigation. So I had to move on. That's what the fans didn't know. I had to move on. Otherwise, it would have crippled the Cavaliers for a couple of years.
How uncomfortable was that to go through publicly? Have you had something like that basketball related as uncomfortable?
I mean, at the time it was uncomfortable, but the extra money the Jazz were giving me made it pretty cool. It ended up working out just fine from that perspective, but anytime you hear stuff being said about you and not everybody knows all the details and I couldn't really speak about it at the time, it is difficult, but we got through it. Everything that you go through is a lesson and something to be learned and something to grow from. So
What would you regard as the year that you felt the greatest pressure playing basketball?
That's a good question. I mean, my rookie year, trying to prove myself to everybody was difficult, just because, you know, you come into the league and I got thrown in the fire. I was playing like 30 minutes a night when I started to start after a couple of weeks. And I'm going against, you know, Karl Malone and Tim Duncan and KG and Dirk and Rasheed and Jermaine O'Neal, and the list goes on. The power forwards, when I first came in the league, were unbelievable. And I wasn't ready yet. You know, these guys were giving it to me. And so it took me a year or two to be on the level. And then when I made the All-Star team a couple of years later, I felt like all the hard work I put in, all those lessons I learned my rookie year, really helped me motivate me to become a better basketball player.
It is said that Tim Duncan's trash talk is surgical, in that it's fundamental as well, and that he'll just tell you'll miss a block shot by inches, and he'll be like a whisper almost to you. Do you have a Tim Duncan story that you can tell us?
Timmy became a good friend. We played together in 2004 on the Olympics, so we spent a couple of months together over the summer. But I don't know if it was the exact first game, but one of my first games against Timmy, he gave me like 28, 17, like, I don't know, 6 or 7 blocks. At the end of the game, he goes, "Boogs, you're good, but you got to get better, son." That was like one of those moments. But it was an honest moment. It was like, dang, it's coming from the great Timmy D. And I'm like, you know what? I'm going to get in the lab and I'm going to get better, Timmy. So that was, for me, because we became friends, I got a little bit more than like a one word, you know, a humble brag. It was more like, "Booze, you're good, but you got to get in the lab, son." So it was one of those. But he was great. I mean, he really was super fundamental, but that's what made him so terrific. And he was a winner. And I think that's what we all wanted to do, was be able to win. And he just wasn't the flashy guy. He wasn't, you know, necessarily dribbling behind his back all the time and doing the fancy move that the kids like to see. But he got the job done, and you guys can all attest to that.
How about Garnett? Did Garnett have anything to say to you that you were like, "That's gibberish, you're a crazy person"?
Garnett's a whole different monster. KG was very, very talkative, very demonstrative, very passionate, and he let that passion show. I have a couple stories, but I can't really tell them on air.
No,
the language.
No, come on, let it fly. It's okay. It's okay.
Come on, it's okay, because the host says it is.
It's okay, and you could bleep it out yourself if you want to.
Bleep. But we can't.
I'll give you a quick one. So I'm in Cleveland. This is my first year playing. I'm a rook in Cleveland. At this point, early in the season, I'm coming off the bench. I check into the game. We have a dude starting named Chris Mim. He was our starting power forward at the time. And KG's having a tough night. He's like, I don't know what he is. He's like 2 for 7 or 2 for 8 or whatever it is, right? And I come in the game for Chris Mim, who we thought he was doing a great job on him, obviously, because, you know, he's 2 for 7. So that's a pretty good job on Kevin Garnett. And he's in the prime of his career in Minnesota. And he gets fouled. And that's the first thing. So he like walks up to the ball under the basket, grabs a ball. He's like, you know, doing one of these with the ball. And then as he walks back towards the free throw line to shoot his free throws, he's like, "Come on, ticket." I can't say what he said, but he's like, "This dude can't guard you." He's talking to himself in like third person, loud enough so everybody can hear him. And he called himself Ticket, because, you know, his nickname is the Big Ticket. So he'd be like, "Come on, Ticket. This dude can't guard you." Not in those words. But we all got the gist. And then he ended up having like 35 and 20 at the end of the game. But that's just a quick example of Kevin Garnett.
Back-to-back state champs for your sons, the twin boys, Columbus Explorers state champs. How much do they like Coral Gables? Don't they love it? The campus is beautiful. Has anyone spoken to you?
What is happening? What are you
like?
What
is he
doing?
To you? I saw you. I saw him in the Golden Kane Lounge at the Duke game, I'm wondering if they like being in Miami. Columbus Hops skipping a jump away.
Are you teeing up University of Miami?
I just so happen to be a booster.
Legal?
I just so happen to be
this
a booster. No,
this
I would just I can take
illegal.
Him over for a campus visit if you'd like. I know Cameron is probably
will
named after
please,
Cameron Indoor Stadium,
stop,
but we can fix that.
Will you please stop?
You know, if you take out the Adidas scandal years, Coach L has a winning record against Duke.
He's with That's us great. On behalf of Pepsi. Pepsi and DraftKings are giving you a free shot at $100,000. Boozer, tell them how they can do this.
My last name is Ruiz.
Yeah. That's great. Yeah, so I teamed up with Pepsi Zero, the Pepsi Zero Sugar Challenge to encourage people to get zero right. They have their own bracket, the DraftKings Zero Right Bracket Challenge. You get a chance to win $100,000 by getting the incorrect answer. The lowest score will get a chance to win $100,000. Obviously, if you tie with somebody, they'll split it up accordingly. But it's pretty cool. The zero right, there's zero sugar in it. It's supposed to taste amazing. And you can sign up through DraftKings. So sign up, guys, for the DraftKings Zero Right Bracket Challenge. Try to get as many basically incorrect as possible, and the lowest score can win $100,000.
Carlos, thank you for being on with us.
Their games would go so well with Norchad.
Will you knock it off? I didn't ask him about Prince. I was furious, Boozer, when I heard that you told Dan Patrick that Prince wired you $500,000 to ease your mind on that purple salon he put in the house that he was renting from you. You never gave me anything that good, Boozer. I asked you from several different angles. I've asked you how the relationship with Prince went, and you didn't tell me shit. Nothing.
He had a good jump shot. We shot hoops on top on the rooftop. Pretty good jump shot. My bad. I got you.
So does Caden, by the way.
You don't
want to come by to
shut up, Mike Bryant. Thank you, Carlos. Appreciate your time, sir.
Anytime, guys.
Hey, everybody, it's Mike, and typically I record these Miller Lite spots in the studio, but I requested that I specifically record this one from my home office because I got a window, and I'm looking outside at those beautiful fishtail palms, knowing that in just a few seconds, I'm going to go out there, I'm going to crack open a can of Miller Lite, because while sitting outside by my fishtail palms is usually a good time, I like to take it up a notch and make it a Miller time. That's right, you crack that puppy open, and you don't have to think about what you're drinking for a darn second. A lot has changed over the years, including my backyard. Lots of landscaping being done right now. But the one thing that hasn't changed is the undebatable quality of Miller Lite. You don't have to choose what quality is the best. Miller Lite has great taste, and it's less filling. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan, or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces, fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer.
Don Lebatard.
We like to call this one a chorus of Owen Wilson. Yeah. Ready?
Stugatz.
Wow.
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 This is the Don Lebatard Show with the Stugatz.
Let's update some more tournament here, Mike, because we've got a lot of teams to get to. I don't know where Stugatz is. He's been flighty and inconsistent lately. He doesn't like our new schedule. He keeps coming in and out of the room to smoke cigarettes. I don't know where Greg Cody went. We have misplaced Greg Cody. He insisted while packing up his things that we promote his podcast. He doesn't even have time to do it. He said, just ask Chris Cody about what's going on with the Greg Cody show featuring Greg Cody.
Oh, this one. This episode specific is chaotic. Greg Cody's was in the Keys. You know, that should be a sell enough, because you know if he's in the Keys, he's got a BM.
He did it from the Keys?
Yes.
And dozens of beers in?
Most people call BMs bowel movements, right? To my dad, a BM's a Bloody Mary. Like that. Like when I say to you, I had a BM, don't you think bowel movement?
I have a game, and it's when I ask the server, how's your Bloody Mary? It doesn't matter their answer. I'm ordering it.
Oh, man.
It doesn't matter.
That is true. That's actually a great point. But Mike, people do this thing with Bloody Marys. Like, how is it there?
How is their
Bloody Mary? Hey, it's vodka and tomato juice.
Oh, God.
That's it.
I don't like Bloody Marys, but you know what I don't like especially? When they try to get all fancy with them, put like a cocktail shrimp and a piece of bacon and a hot pepper and broccoli.
No,
the thing is taller than the actual drink itself.
Celery and bacon are terrible.
Come on, give me a break.
What are you talking about?
Pimento? I don't understand the appeal.
A date with pimento?
In Miami, they have like a batalito inside and you're like, what are you doing?
You dip it in the tomato juice with vodka and you, yeah.
It's incredible.
Disgusting.
So even if they tell me their Bloody Mary is bad, I'll be like, I don't believe you.
So this week on the Greg Cody Show with Greg Cody, my dad is on site in the Keys. His connection's terrible. It's chaotic. We also have Kate Fagan. She saves the interview because luckily we have like a 20-minute like period of just normalness. But outside of that, it's chaotic. But the Greg Cody Show, we're finding our groove there, Dan. I think people should check it out. It's fun. We make fun of, if you like to make fun of Greg, if you like Greg Cody Tuesdays, that's kind of what we do every Monday. And we release it Monday, but
put it on the poll, please, at Lebatard Show. Tomato juice, disgusting. Yes or no?
Yes.
At Lebatard Show.
With some horseradish in there.
I don't know. What are we doing?
I like a spicy Bloody Mary.
Drinking soup. Why would I do that?
If you have a Bloody Mary station, oh, are we best friends?
Put it on the poll as well. Are you drinking soup with vodka when you have a Bloody Mary?
Oh, God.
At Le Batard Show.
It does give me the heartburn occasionally, but
worth it.
Say your taste buds change every 7 years, and I used to not get it when it came to Bloody Marys. Now, I totally get it.
What's your rule? Like, for me, it's two, and then we move on to something else.
My rule is two.
Yeah. Rule I used to be a one. It's a weird sentence. I used to be only be able to do
it
one.
It is a
do
great
one.
Sentence. Go sit in the penalty box.
What? Yeah. But now
wow.
I do too.
Yeah. I do too. Because what I like so much is like, okay, it's a great early morning thing because I get my base. I'm getting nutrients and the nice, poison.
Nice soup base.
Yeah.
Go ahead and go sit in the penalty box.
Jesus.
I love a BM.
Let's update the tournament here. Tennessee, Stugatz, is a 4 seed, and Tennessee in our Looks Like tournament is represented by...
Dan Campbell looks like a retired professional wrestler, now running for office and running on a platform promising to body slam taxes.
You still have Rick Barnes over there? Is Rick Barnes the head coach for Tennessee?
I thought it was Shaka Smart.
Is it Shaka Smart?
I have no idea.
It's not Bruce Pearl anymore.
13, Louisiana is represented by...
Doc Rivers looked like he's annoyed his wife volunteered him for this.
Did you guys see photos of that Clippers show that they're making? And I assume Lawrence Fishburne is playing Doc Rivers.
He is. He's playing. I thought he was playing Doc Rivers.
So
it's a great choice.
I can't make any assumptions based off the photo that I saw. There could only be one of those actors playing Blake Griffin. He looks nothing like Blake Griffin.
But do you think Lawrence Fishburne is going to do what Tony just did, which is... Do you think Lawrence Fishburne is going to spend... This is going to be test the acting range of Lawrence Fishburne because he's got to do that hoarse whisper voice that Doc Rivers always talks in.
That's Blake's fault.
That would be annoying to have to do all of your dialogue in that voice.
It sucked when I didn't have a voice for like 3 days. I just had to speak like that. People like, what's wrong with you? I'm like, oh, I got a thing. I can't talk.
Let's update more of the tournament, please. Memphis, the 8 seed, is represented by...
Daniel Snyder looks like the doomed branch manager in a Jason Statham movie who can't remember the combo to the vote.
You know who their head coach is, Dan? Penny Hardaway.
Yeah.
Rick Barnes is still in Tennessee, by the way.
All right. Well, Rick Barnes, as long as he's anywhere, won't win.
It's Rodney Terry. He's the coach at Texas.
Yeah, they're good.
FAU, also good. FAU, have they still only lost twice this season, or did they do some more losing toward the end of the season? FAU
the Owls.
Is represented by...
Andrew Luck looks like he switched from coffee to a mushroom-based tea, and it absolutely changed his life for the better.
Foul Owl on the prowl. The FAU Owls. Do you have any interest in the Lawrence, I think they're called the Sterling Affairs, the Lawrence Fishburne Netflix special on the racist Clipper scandal?
I didn't. And then I saw a set picture. And it's like I ordered the Showtime show on Wish type of meme because the casting is so terrible. It's awful. None of these people look like they got DeAndre Jordan's tattoos right. That's what I'll say about it. They got the tattoos right for DeAndre Jordan. I think the actor playing him is 5'10". We'll see how that works. But
Stugatz, why have you been talking today about frozen dinners? What is the is your wife out of town? Like what is happening?
No, she's in town. She's fine. I just love a good frozen dinner. Always have, always will.
This is true about him. Always has.
I always have. And in fact, I will tell you, Dan, I have a very special list of my top 5 frozen dinners.
Do you really?
Yeah.
What is this? Just combinations or brand types? What is it that you're doing here with
a top 5 brought to us by the official partner of the NBA, DraftKings?
Yes. It is a top 5 frozen dinners. I can't explain my love for frozen dinners other than Stouffer's Pizza. That's where it started. And I'm like, if this is that good, I have to try some more. So I've tried a lot of them. And because I've tried a lot of them, I do have a top 5 list.
Well, it's convenience, right? And we have argued before that there is no such thing as bad pizza, but I would assume that Stouffer's frozen pizza might be close to the top of the list on poor pizzas.
No.
There's no bad pizza.
No.
Just compared to pizzas you guys have, a frozen pizza being as good as a pizza you can get in a legitimate pizzeria.
That frozen pizza, yeah.
Depends. Yeah. Let me check my list.
Oh, he's got a list for this one, too?
I mean, I would say Ilya's is not great. Stouffer's took it to a whole new level, you know? Just me.
French bread Stouffer's pizza kind of guy?
I assume that Stouffer's, I associate word association with them with stuffing. I don't associate them with pizzas, necessarily.
I would say the best of the Stouffer's is probably the pepperoni French bread pizza, right?
You think about lasagna? Is that type of thing that Stouffer's used to do?
Stuffing is what I think of. That's not lasagna. Stuffing. Isn't it Stouffer's stuffing? Isn't that what they're associated with? Isn't that their chief?
Like for Thanksgiving?
What is stuffing?
Yeah, no, like Thanksgiving stuffing? Yeah. No, we're talking about frozen food.
But Stouffer's also, I know what Dan's talking about.
I don't associate Stouffer's with stuffing.
I associate Stouffer's with frozen dinners.
Isn't it Stovetop Stuffing?
It's Stovetop. That's the name of it, Stovetop.
Yeah, but
it's not Stouffer's.
It's not Stouffer's, no.
Okay, my bad. I thought it was Stouffer's Stovetop.
What? Wow.
Oh, no.
Stuffing.
It would change everything. Need a dumper.
It's much different.
Number one.
What are we stuffing?
Number five. Number five on top five frozen foods. Just an unfortunate word choice. That's all. Number five, Stugatz.
The Hungry Man's Mexican Fiesta. Delightful. Out of last week. What did you say, man?
Number four.
Crazy. Stouffer's Chicken Parm. It's good, right, Roy?
Oh, yeah.
Solid.
Number three.
Stouffer's Mac and Cheese. I'm never going to be able to move past what happened.
Tomcat.
Number two.
That would be a pivot for that company.
Two.
Stouffer's Pepperoni Pizza. French bread.
So Stouffer's, according to you, has a corner on all frozen foods.
Stouffer's and Hungry Man. Yeah.
They don't have a stuffing nor a
Yeah. Number one.
Whatever you said.
They don't have. I'm just totally wrong. That those are two different things.
Hungry Man. Actually, the real number one on my list is their turkey dinner. Hungry Man turkey dinner that has a little side of mashed potato, not too much, but enough, and a little side of stuffing as well with fantastic gravy.
So I think
it is the best frozen dinner I've ever had.
Was the brand behind Stovetop, but I guess it's in the Kraft family, and they've done a lot of rebranding to now the point is it's just Stovetop.
Yeah.
But, I'm not getting anything on pussy, though.
No. Not in the food line.
I'll keep looking.
Maybe a more detailed search there.
Yeah.
Yeah, really hone in on it.
Yeah. Well, I'm told some people can't find it.
P-U-S.
No, I'm good. Okay,
thank you, Roy. I appreciate your helpful work.
No problem, man. Comment to us being subtle this segment.
I associate just general frozen
We can
dinners.
Move on, man. We can just move on.
Yeah.
I associate them with sadness and loneliness.
Yeah.
Just the sad,
TV dinner?
The sad, just all
I
of
just feel
people
sad
are on the go.
And lonely when I eat them.
No. Sometimes people are happy because they're so active and they only have time for a quick TV dinner.
Right.
Yeah.
I will tell you, even while eating them with my wife right next to me, I feel sad and lonely.
I think what Dan's doing, TV dinners give off Danny DeVito and Matilda.
With the TV tray.
Has ever seen that movie? It's just sad, just like.
But now I'm picturing Stugatz doing it, right? I'm picturing Stugatz getting home. I don't imagine his wife being around, but I guess maybe he can be lonely while she's sitting there as well and just doesn't feel like.
Do you do the TV dinner as a meal replacement or a meal supplement? Like this is its own meal. It's not lunchtime.
A little secret meal?
Yeah.
Or does this replace dinner?
Yeah, it is my dinner, yes.
That is kind of sad, especially if your wife is there. You don't ask her, what do you want?
No, she puts one of those into the microwave for me.
Wow. Kids out of the house.
She knows I like them.
Kids out of the house.
You do understand why I find it sad, though, that tiny corner of mashed potatoes is number one on your list?
So good.
It's something that's been in the fridge for several months.
Proportional, though. Like, you can't have too much mashed potatoes. It makes you really, really full. Yeah. And so
the portion control on a TV dinner is essential.
It's really good. Yeah, I love that little corner. It's my favorite corner.
It makes up for all the preservatives.
Put it on the poll, please, Juju at Levitard Show. Is mashed potatoes your favorite corner of the frozen food dinner?
Don Levitard.
Oh, I think Larry Fitzgerald's on the green right there.
Stugatz.
That's Alfonso Ribeiro. How do you think that Larry Fitzgerald
is? The son.
Oh, the son.
To be fair. Yeah, yeah. To be fair.
All right, whatever. Oh.
Alfonso Ribeiro has a great ass.
This is the Don Levitard Show with the Stugatz.
Am I supposed to warm up before, like, a first pitch? Because, like, Chris asked me if I wanted to catch today.
I was telling Billy, I'm willing to have a catch with him after the show.
Yeah.
Get the arm loosened up. Billy, when I heard Billy is throwing out a first pitch, I don't think I've ever been as angry at Billy. And
why?
It's nothing he did. It's just, wow. I've said before, I want to throw out a first pitch somewhere.
Me too. Yeah.
Somewhere respected.
But you didn't go to FIU, so.
No, I'm not.
I went to FIU.
Can I just go with you and just be like, he's with me. He's doing it too. Come on.
You're saying tomorrow night?
Bring me with you. Let me just do it too. Yeah. Be like, this is my stipulation.
Well,
you want Billy Gill?
Moment, though,
all right, fine, I mean, you're right. I'll do another one.
Right.
I'm just saying, overall, I'm jealous of what he's doing, and he does need to warm up because you don't want to embarrass yourself. You got to aim high because it always goes much lower than you think it's going to go, and you have to warm up. You do. You got to throw. At least have a good catch, a nice 10-15 minute catch session before you play.
But you want to have a catch today to warm up for tomorrow?
I told him I was willing to today
have
a catch to get his arm ready for tomorrow.
My dad did the same. Like, he found out and he asked me if I wanted to play catch to kind of warm up and start. We measure it out, I guess, and then we figure it out.
Like?
Then he was asking, like, oh, it's like, should we go? Like, is there a mound? Because if I go off the mound, which I think I have to, right, then it's different than just throwing the flat ground. And then Taylor, who works here now, decided to tell everybody that he's done this before, and then, like, within seconds showed everybody the video of him doing it. But he was wearing a glove, which I'm not going to do. Like, he did a full windup with a glove, which seems like a bit much.
The glove
if you
is
ask me.
It's a little
unnecessary.
Yeah.
Put this on the poll at Levitard Show. Have you ever had a catch with your dad? And also put on the poll, if you were throwing out an honorary first pitch, do you bring a glove?
No chance. I can't take a glove. As if the stack is against me. It's stacked against me. The cards are stacked against me. Whatever it is. I have maybe some issue, tennis elbow, Tommy John necessary on my elbow. So that's kind of my worry about the playing the catch and the warming up is I feel like there's only so many throws left on this elbow before I have to have something addressed, right? And yesterday, diagnosed. It wasn't just in my head. Diagnosed. Scratched cornea.
Oh, that hurts.
I'm
so, like,
sorry.
this eye has
Thank
a little bit of something going on. Yeah.
Do you have a catch or play catch?
I like to have a catch.
You have a catch.
I play catch.
I also play catch. Are you okay? Stugatz has talked for years about how bad the scratched cornea is.
It's been okay so far. I mean, the light bothers me a little bit. I have a bunch of drops I have to put in here, like, every once in a while. I was honestly expecting it to be a lot worse just based on what Stugatz has described. And my friend over there in the corner, Tony, had it last year when we had, like, the championship game watch along, and he had, like, these Ray Charles glasses on for, like, 2 months.
On top of it. That
and then he was in a wheelchair
infection.
One day and was saying
was
how difficult it was.
That's not
Oh,
true.
That was the other injury that you had that Patrick Mahomes played through.
I've never been in a wheelchair. What are you talking about?
Did you and Poppy play catch?
Paul Pierce over there.
Did you and Poppy play catch often? It seems like something that is a rite of passage for a father and son.
He coached my little league teams, but I don't remember there being a great deal of affection.
I never had that with my dad. I think my version of having a catch with my dad was like the Nordstrom semi-annual sale.
I feel like you asked me that question just so you could say that.
Yes.
You did, yeah.
Now, are you prepared for, because this is the big, like, as important as the actual pitch is after the pitch, when the catcher comes out, hands you the ball. It's like a set thing. He's going to hand you the ball. You shake. You look for a picture. I don't know if you keep the handshake connected for the picture. This is the part
I haven't thought
about. You're going to be maybe fist pumps. Like, you got to prepare yourself how afterwards you're going to hand to me this hand, then we're going to shake. That's why if you have a glove, it throws everything off.
You really want this.
I want nothing else more in life than to throw out a first pitch.
Practice tosses.
I want a George Bush it too. Just right down the middle. How about George Bush? Can we get up for George Bush?
Oh, yeah.
One time. That first pitch. After 9/11.
We need that one right down the pipe and he delivered.
The opening
at Kimmel. That was like a two-seamer. That was like a two-seamer. Had like it was like it started out outside and worked back in.
It's a whole can of worms. I don't know you want to open.
Yeah,
let's give it up for George.
You did that
Bush.
With a vest.
Yeah, he did it with the bulletproof vest.
What
Why
are you
don't
wear?
You just throw out the first? Don't put all this stuff in my head because I know you're trying to do this to throw me off so that it goes poorly. What are you
going
to wear? What are you going to do after? How are you going to do this? Where do you shake your hand? You should wear a glove. You should wear. Someone told me across the hall you should wear a full baseball uniform. It's like no, you guys are just trying to
be Yankee.
Are you going to wear spikes? We forgot about the pre when you're walking out the wave. Now from the Dan Le Batard Show, Billy Gill, and you gotta don't step on the line.
Do not step on the line.
Don't step on that line.
You even do like a hop.
Help.
Like don't just step over it. Gotta give it like a
not too much
take
of a hop though, because you could hurt yourself. Yeah. What if I sprained my ankle?
If you step on the baseline, I mean
that's big trouble for you.
Be great, Billy, if you were jogging out there, jumped over the line,
trip
and
over
sprained
it.
Your
See, these
ankle
are the people
like
I'm surrounded
Durant.
With. People want me to get injured.
I'm literally not supported. I'm telling you all the things you're going to deal with.
Yep.
Why don't you throw out the first pitch at your daughter's T-ball game?
It's T-ball.
Hey, Dylan. Oh, hey, Coach
no
Dylan,
pitchers.
Can I? I mean, I'd love to.
Coach Dylan.
This is a big baseball week for you in general, Billy. You got the World Baseball Classic. It's got flavor and ethnicity all over it. They're having more fun than anyone's ever seen over there.
A walk-off mercy rule perfect game yesterday that wasn't a perfect game because it wasn't 27 outs, but it was a perfect game. What do you do there? Like, I was thinking, what if like the Puerto Rican team is just like, hey, we want to finish this game off. Like, we just won't bat. Let's just go and try to get three outs. Or does like Team Israel say like
we'll
no,
you,
we're not
we'll
going to
give you 12 outs here? We'll
I think when you have a perfect game going and you've reached the mercy rule, you should have the option of keeping the game going because you want to finish off the perfect game.
But you're just kind of really rubbing it in the face.
But
of the
he's
other
also
team.
Saying to do it just 12 straight outs. Just let the other team keep batting, and you're not even going to bat. Just the only goal is to get the next 12 outs.
I hadn't even considered that they could have done that. Yeah, they only needed three outs. It was the bottom of the eighth inning, and then they got a hit that drove in a run. Also, like if I'm the runner on second base, I just stop at third base, right, and just try to like run myself into a double play
or
something.
Mercy rule denied them the glory of having
100%
the game. I didn't realize it was in the eighth inning.
Pitcher, perfect game too. Because
Ian
of
Kinsler.
The rules, yeah.
Ian Kinsler's the manager for Israel. I saw that.
Really?
Hot seat?
Oh, wow.
Billy, we have also
your best player.
You and Chris Cody doing the Marlins game on Friday. Where is it that... Where is it? I love when Stugatz is so amused by his own joke that he can't continue.
What happened?
Friday, what you guys are doing for spring training, what are the details that people need to know so that they can hear you and Chris Cody do your annual spring training game for the Marlins?
Well, so we were invited back to do another spring training game. Now, guys, here's the thing. There's two games. It's a split squad situation. We're going to be doing the 1 o'clock game against the Cardinals in Jupiter. I think you can listen to it on 940 down here locally. Last year, they also streamed like the video on the internet. So I'll get further details so I can give you more information on that. But there are two games. We're doing the first one at 1 o'clock.
The whole game? Several innings?
No, the whole game.
This?
No, we're in for the whole kid and caboodle, as they say. Wow.
And if I remember, and if I remember last year, it was a lot of fun. By the seventh, you think it's just real easy, baseball slow. But I remember we were like tired by the seventh or eighth inning. We were like, wow, this is a lot of work.
No, to the point that the announcer, broadcaster, Kyle Seeloff in the seventh inning goes, huh, you guys are really tired out here by the seventh, huh?
I believe he hit us with, you guys are really losing some steam here.
Yeah.
That's always good to hear from your play-by-play guy as an inning starts.
Bit of a smartass, that Kyle Seeloff, if you ask me. Mm-hmm.
So it's just basically 2.5 hours of Billy and I trying to annoy Kyle Seeloff.
No, I'm going prepared. I'm taking all
I brought
Thursday.
Notes last year.
Yeah.
Billy did this thing where it's like, Chris has a bunch of notes. He should read them. It's like, that's not, these should come out naturally. Like,
I was trying to help.
Oh, there's a guy. A funny thing about this guy. And then I give a note. Billy's like, he has notes. He should read them.
Well, the thing is that it got off to a bad start because Chris did prepare a bunch of notes. And then we got there. And as spring training goes, none of the players were in the lineup that day.
So I was like, who's this guy batting?
Everyone he prepared for wasn't playing.
And then Jose Altuve came up, hit a fly ball left field. I was like, that's staying. It was a home run. Mm-hmm. Look, we're getting better. It was my first time last year.
First time, yeah. It's reps, Dan. It's all about reps in the broadcast game. You know what I mean?
Who's that guy is one of the things that the analysis that came out of your mouth was?
I mean, there's a lot of guys.
It's spring training. When you get into the number 87s, 83s, that's the thing that happens. Dan, in spring training, there's sometimes they don't even bother putting the name on the back of the jersey. Like, and it's a fair thing to say, who's that guy?
And we're knowing to to brag, because when you guys did a Major League Baseball game, Sugats confused plenty of players.
This is an unmitigated disaster.
Epic failure. But here, there's a guy in the batter's box, Samson. Everybody wants to know when you're going to pay that man his money.
That'd be Gabby Sanchez, of course. Way to paint that picture,
Dan. No, that's Ugla.
Dan Ugla's
that's
up there.
Oh, Danny
so
Ugla. Danny Ugla. Well, let me paint the picture, okay?
You don't have to pay Gabby for a while. He'll be here for a little while. Ugla's the one that they've got to pay.
I can't actually believe you two have a radio show. It's very sad. The count to Dan is 1-2, first and third now. Nobody outs as the Marlins try to really stick on Chris Carpenter. What could be his worst outing of the year. Hopefully it will be. Dan, we're talking to him. We would very much like
Marlins
to have him
radio.
Long-term.
Marlins Radio's worst outing of the year too.
There's a bloop to the left side there, caught by the shortstop, Skip Schumacher. I hope it's Skip Schumacher. It better be Skip Schumacher.
It's actually Brendan Ryan.
It's baseball fault. They don't market their players. I mean.
So this is a pretty big at-bat, Stu.
Does that include the shot he took in the face when he was standing in the on base?
Stu, you gotta stop talking when there's a hit.
Logan Morrison with a big base hit up the right side, and Martinez slides into first. First and third, no out here in the bottom of the third inning.
Two players sliding into first.
It's amazing, but I had a couple more reps, man. I would have been there. I mean,
that's where I'm at. Yeah. Like, I'll be on my second rep, so yeah, it's gonna be great.
You want to come?
No.
I thought he'd tell you that he would come and then not come.
Rudely, I don't want him there.
He would make it so much more accurate. It's really strange that Stugatz left there. Even understanding,
like Ron Burgundy after saying "Go bleep yourself, San Diego." Good show, everyone. Yeah. Good finger guns for everybody.
He left there saying I'd
top
be good.
Notch.
I'd be good at that with just a couple of more reps.
That's what Geffner said. I mean, Glenn Geffner. He told me that he did. Few more reps, a couple of games away, he said, from being a regular play-by-play guy.
You've done it now.
He didn't say it.
I think after we did ours last year with Kyle Seeloff got some sort of text from Glenn Geffner of like,
no,
that existed today. Yeah, like, kind of like, just like the backhanded, like, you guys did a broadcast. It was something, like, I don't forget what the tweet was. It was something passive-aggressive. I don't think he enjoyed it.
I think he said we got through it. It was like, I think it was one of, if not the last, spring training broadcasts of the season. And he's like, well, we all survived that. Head into the regular season now.
That existed today.
We're just living. We're just, look, we're going to crush it. We're going to crush it. Tune in, 9:40.
Yes, that's the right channel.
That sounded like a time you were giving.
7 past the hour.
7 in front of the hour.
If you want something worse than just spring training on the radio, the comedy stylings
how dare
of
you.
Billy and Chris over the last 90 seconds give you an indication of their timing.
Well, he was going to make a joke and then realized, let me not make that joke.
And we were on air waiting for the joke to be made, and instead he just sort of bailed and then clipped the microphone.
Okay. We can edit this out.
At least
we're live today?
At least
live.
He didn't say pussy.
Yeah.
Don Lebatard.
Listen, it could be Julius Randle's building. How about that?
The Mecca.
Ours, Julius. The Mecca.
Stugatz.
Steve Martin was a prop comic.
You said that?
I said it 2 seconds earlier than you.
This is the Don Lebatard Show with the Stugatz.
Put it on the poll, please, Juju, at Lebatard Show. Is Jim Cramer the Stugatz of the business world? He recommended Silicon Valley Bank investments last month.
Oof.
The CEO of Silicon Valley Bank, incidentally, reportedly Gary Becker, sold $3.6 million in shares the day before the bank collapsed.
Hmm. Funny how that always works out, huh?
Yeah.
I want to ask you guys about some reporting that the Philadelphia Inquirer did. And you've heard me troubled in the past about how journalism seems to be dying. Local journalism really doesn't have the resources to keep up with the corruption. We know that so much of politics has been bought. I don't understand how you see what's been happening apocalyptically around the world with climate change and Biden allows the kind of drilling that's being allowed in Alaska right now, where the biggest story of all of our lifetimes, which is that the world seems to be suffering, the Earth seems to be suffering from apocalyptic changes that are made because we've all been bought by oil in government and leadership. And journalists don't have the resources to keep up with what oil is buying. In the small world of sports, the Philadelphia Inquirer did some reporting that I had not considered and must be unspeakably painful to the people affected by this. But Tug McGraw, John Vukovich, Ken Brett, Dan Quisenberry, Darren Dalton, David West, they all died from an incredibly rare form of brain cancer that it seems is related to the forever chemicals in the AstroTurf that they played on, that they were basically baking on a field that they were playing 81 games on, that they did not know that the chemicals, the forever chemicals in the fake turf, ended up costing them their lives, and God knows how bad their lives were at the end with whatever it is that the forever chemicals do to your brain chemistry that don't make life some sort of great pleasure.
I'm fascinated by this because E60 did a really heartbreaking piece on how the lives of youth soccer have been affected by this, especially it's disproportionate when you get into the women's game. Back then, it stands to reason maybe not enough people knew the risk. What's heartbreaking right now is you go to an artificial turf soccer pitch right now, a lot of them still aren't corn stalk. Most of them have those grounded up tire bits that we know are carcinogenic and have led to really heartbreaking examples. I, for one, am locked in on it because every week, twice a week, I play pickup soccer on those artificial turfs. And I've had moments like I've seen in that outside the lines or that E60 where it gets stuck in my eye and I worry about it. It is a deep concern of mine. This stuff is not, we're not removed from what's going on right now. There are underserved parts of the community that don't have these updated, safer artificial fields. And we should really examine why the women are more susceptible to this. I think it's because they're often playing on worse fields for several circumstances. This is going on right now, and I really hope that this story, as heartbreaking as it is with the Phillies, opens people's eyes to what's going on, because we're not far removed from that. This isn't an AstroTurf thing from a bygone era. This is going on right now.
You guys talking about it is opening up my eyes, because I was honestly never aware. I was not aware of this story and the effects. I knew Darren Dalton's story. I didn't know the rest, and that's frightening. And now I'm thinking back to all the fields my daughter has played on over the years. And so it's going to be interesting.
Particularly bad for keepers because they're diving around on this stuff.
But what's the turf you're looking for? What's the
corn stalk is okay. A safer alternative. What you want is real grass. But I had to have a conversation with my wife about youth soccer. Sure. My daughter right now is presently playing on one of those very same fields. It's not too hot right now. When it gets a little warmer and more of that stuff is in the air, it's a concern of mine that I have. And I certainly don't want her to play keeper on these artificial turfs, because that affects women disproportionately, the keepers that are diving around on this stuff. And I would not want my daughter to be playing keeper on this type of surface and rolling around in it. I stop her every time she digs her hand. She's a three-year-old, so she wants to dig her hand through the turf and pick up those little ground-up black bits of tire. I always I scold her, like, no, don't do that. It's very concerning. It's one of those things that I don't think we know nearly enough about, and I hope that there might be people learning about this right now. Really examine it, and there's a lot of good information out there on the internet to help you make an informed choice.
Something else, Stugatz, a different kind of chemical that I wanted to talk about, because I was just curious who has to say this thing in order to make it a more credible kind of scandal. Chael Sonnen, admitted bad guy, villainous, public persona who doesn't mind being a wrestling heel and is now removed from mixed martial arts, from performing, but still does announcing and still has a giant following because he's got a big mouth. Chael Sonnen says, flatly, some might say irresponsibly, hey, me and LeBron have the same drug guy. And it hasn't caught. And I'm wondering who has to say it in order for that to be the kind of scandal that you might consider it, given that we don't allow the biggest guys or women in sports to be moving through the pharmacy quietly.
LeBron and Tiger, correct?
All I saw was that he said it of LeBron. He said, we have the same drug guy, and he is claiming pretty flatly that LeBron, I think we've gotten numb to all this stuff. I think that we assume that the Tom Brady's and the LeBron James's of the world are using scientific advancements in order to play longer than anyone has seen people play successfully in sports.
He shared this with Andrew Schultz on the Flagrant podcast.
Right. And it was Tiger as well, I believe. I'm numb to it. I'm holding my hand up because I'm one of those people, Dan, where I've just assumed, for better or for worse, like, it doesn't matter to me. I understand why they take it. There's a part of me that is thankful that they're taking it because I get to see them play longer than I would normally get to see some of the greatest athletes of all time play their sport. It's their decision. And I've operated under the assumption for many years that, of course, LeBron is taking something. So Chael Sonnen's enough for me.
But you would agree, though, right, that if this was proven, it would be a scandal of the highest order, would it not? You may not react to it, but right. You don't think it would be something? Because nobody gets to skate on this stuff when it's proven.
I guess those two names would make it a massive scandal, yeah, of
so
course.
I'm asking you, I guess, who has to say it? If not Chael Sonnen, who's viewed as a bit of a professional wrestler, who has to say it for it to become the scandal I imagine it would become as an accusation? Because if it were someone in his sport, if it was a peer, if Kevin Durant said this about LeBron,
that would make it a scandal. Yep.
But where is the, I'm asking you, like, what's the mid-region? Because it's
that's
not become
mutually assured destruction. Oh, yeah, we both are doing it.
But no one is picking up this story in a way that's meaningful. And I'm assuming it's because it's Chael Sonnen. Because I would not assume that.
No, because Jose Canseco was a guy who said it. He wasn't terribly credible.
I'm not assuming that it's not credible. I'm saying,
I think we're numb to it.
Why hasn't it morphed into something bigger? I don't think it's because we're numb to it.
It just did. Top three sports podcasts on the planet, you know, recklessly.
What do you mean recklessly? Chael Sonnen said
it's recklessly. Oh, Chael Sonnen said it.
What do you mean it's reckless because Chael Sonnen said on a comedian's podcast?
Come on.
But I asked this honestly, not knowing the answer. How often do players in the NBA get suspended for performance enhancing drugs?
Not very.
So like, that's what it's going to take for it to be a thing. Someone to fail a test and get suspended and caught. And if it doesn't happen, then it's just hearsay.
Agreed. I'm talking about what gets picked up, though, as a larger mainstream source.
Would you ask LeBron James at an availability about this?
No, somebody should.
No, would you?
No one will.
Would you?
No one will. Sure.
I don't think anybody will.
No, you wouldn't.
What do you mean? Okay, thank you for asking me my opinion.
All right. That's the end of hour two. We'll
Hey everybody, it's Mike, and typically I record these Miller Lite spots in the studio, but I requested that I specifically record this one from my home office because I got a window, and I'm looking outside at those beautiful fishtail palms, knowing that in just a few seconds, I'm going to go out there, I'm going to crack open a can of Miller Lite, because while sitting outside by my fishtail palms is usually a good time, I like to take it up a notch and make it a Miller time. That's right, you crack that puppy open, and you don't have to think about what you're drinking for a darn second. A lot has changed over the years, including my backyard. Lots of landscaping being done right now. But the one thing that hasn't changed is the undebatable quality of Miller Lite. You don't have to choose what quality is the best. Miller Lite has great taste, and it's less filling. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, Visit MillerLite.com/Dan, or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces, fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer.